Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it as we get into the 7 o'clock hour here on KMOX. It is a Gray Bar Sports Open Line later on this hour. I hope you're with us. We've got one guest scheduled for this hour as we are going to be talking about the Illinois-Michigan game with Doug Bouchon. He's the editor and the publisher of the Illinois rival site Orange and Blue News. So Doug is going to join us coming up in about a half hour or so right here on KMOX. This next topic is actually a topic that sometimes... I know my job, literally my job, is to talk and explain things and to for you to understand where I am coming from on various things. This is actually one of those topics where I struggle to really use words to fully explain my true belief. And it comes to the state of college athletics. And it was once again, a spotlight was really placed upon it when we found out that Virginia men's basketball coach Tony Bennett had made the decision to retire. And he, in the world of college basketball, he's a relatively young guy. He is somebody who's had a lot of success with that program, obviously winning a national title. Now, to be fair, it's been a few years since they've won a NCAA tournament game. They're a team that I believe they were the preseason number 5 team in the ACC this year. So they have fallen off a bit here since winning that national title. But Tony Bennett's a good coach. Tony Bennett is, I think, somebody who's great for 18 to 22-year-old men to be led by as they are still continuing to grow up. And he spoke today, did a press conference explaining his retirement. He talked about the, quote, current environment of college sports. A couple quotes from him. He said, "The hardest thing to say is when I looked at myself and realized I'm no longer the best coach to lead this program in the current environment. If you're going to do it, you got to be all in. If you do it half-hearted, it's not fair to the university and those young men. So in looking at it, that's what made me step down." Speaking specifically about the transfer portal and name, image, likeness, he said, "I think it's right for student athletes to receive revenue. Please don't mistake me. The game in college athletics is not in a healthy spot. It's not. And there needs to be change. And it's not going to go back. I think I was equipped to do the job here the old way. That's who I am. It's going to be closer to a professional model. There's got to be collective bargaining. There has to be restriction on the salary pool. There has to be transfer regulation restrictions. There has to be some limits on agent involvement to these young guys. And I worry a lot about the mental health of the student athletes as all this stuff comes down." Unquote. All right. So the first thing that I want to get out of the way when discussing this is I am a proponent of name, image, likeness, and I am a proponent of college athletes making money. I've never, ever, ever, ever thought it was fair that these college programs were bringing in millions and millions of dollars, that coaches were being paid millions and millions of dollars, and I'm not trying to be completely dismissive of the value of a scholarship because there is value in that. But that value of a scholarship certainly was not the value that a young college athlete playing men's college basketball, football, in some places women's college basketball, in some places baseball, that it did not match the value that they were bringing to the university. So I'm glad these kids are getting paid. It's fair. What I'm not glad about is the state of college athletics as a result of it. And when speaking specifically about Tony Bennett, you know what? He was part of the machine that made this happen. He was somebody who's been paid very, very highly and was able to reap the benefits of the way the system was. So there's some blood on his hands as much as there is other coaches, other conference commissioners, the NCAA, the head of the NCAA, who for years was Mark Emmert, and he just stuck his head in the sand and let things go and never had any compromise and never allowed for anything to progress. And unfortunately, And I only say unfortunately because of the actual impact on 18 to 22-year-old kids. I don't say unfortunately because of the product. Because let's be clear. The college athletics product right now, college football is as good as it's ever been. College basketball is as good as it's ever been. It is fantastic. And in some ways, the transfer portal allows teams to... It's not just the top teams that are good. If you're a really good player who's not getting an opportunity at a top-level program, you can go somewhere else and help them win right away. So I guess at the end of the day, what I'm complaining about isn't actually impacting the game on the field, the game on the court, and I get that. But I would argue that the situation with the UNLV quarterback who left the program after three games because he wasn't getting his NIL money, I don't think that's good for college athletics. I just don't. Now, I don't blame him actually personally. If he went to UNLV and an assistant coach promised him a certain amount of money and then they didn't follow through with it, like I don't blame the kid for walking out, but I would argue that it's not good for college athletics when you have those type of situations playing out. And part of the reason that type of situation was able to play out was because of the unregulated nature of name, image, likeness and the way that this money is coming from all over the places. It can be coming through an NIL collective. It can be coming through, you know, business-to-business direct type situations. It can be coming from anywhere. We're the wild, wild west right now of college athletes being paid. But the NCAA is responsible. In all parties involved, NCAA going down to conference commissioners, going down to coaches, going down to athletic directors, everybody. So for this conversation, every time I reference NCAA from here on out, just know that they talking about every power broker that has existed in college athletics, from coaches to administrators to commissioners, everybody. That's who I'm talking about. I'm talking about everybody when I talk about the NCAA in terms of this conversation that we're having right now, just to make things go a little bit easier. When they sit there and it is very clear that the winds of change are coming to college athletics, that kids do want to get paid and they probably have a legal standing for it, when all this stuff is coming down the pike and the NCAA, instead of starting to have conversations with student athletes and starting to talk internally about what they can do to make things more fair and equitable, they instead just fight off everything as much as they can, or they just ignore what's going on. And what happens? These things go to court. Court case after court case after court case after court case, the NCAA loses. So now we're living in a world where the college athletics atmosphere is being governed by lawsuits and cases that were lost by the NCAA. And you've lost the opportunity to regulate anything. And that's where we come out to it being the wild, wild west. Every single time the NCAA tries to put a rule in place, well, the student athletes have won every step of the way. So they're just going to challenge it. NCAA wants to tell you that you can only transfer once. We'll challenge that. NCAA tries to tell you that there's certain money that you can't be bringing in through NIL. We'll challenge that. Like, just challenge everything, and they keep winning. And here we are, where Tony Bennett, I think the world of Tony Bennett, by the way. I think he is a great coach. I think these 18 to 22-year-old young men who have come through the program have been set up to be better young men. I'm a big believer in coaches can have as much impact as almost anybody outside of parents, and sometimes more impact than parents, depending on the family situation you're coming from. I'm a big believer that coaches are the individuals that help get these kids on the right track and help with character development and all of those things. And because the NCAA, and again, Tony Bennett was part of this. He was part of it. So this is where I struggle to talk through this, because some of the blame comes back to him because he was part of the machine that made all this happen. But we're now living in this world of college athletics, and he's not the only one. He is not the only one where individuals, men and women, are stepping away from college athletics because they don't have the stomach for what it has turned into. And I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong. I've been wrong on things before. I'll be wrong on things again. I feel like if you go back 10, 15, 20 years, if the NCAA would have been more thoughtful, would have been more open-minded, would have been okay creating a situation where kids can make money, where they can have a piece of the pie that's coming in, if they would have just gotten out in front of this, where not every single rule and regulation that they have in place needs to be challenged in court where the NCAA loses, I feel like if they would have done that, we would be in a different spot right now. But there they were, taking in millions and millions and millions of dollars. Everybody was just lining their pockets with money at the cost of these kids not getting to see a thing outside of some gear and a scholarship. And now we're here. So Tony Bennett and company did it to themselves. But it stinks. It stinks. And not a lot of people talk about 18 to 22-year-old student-athletes as being kids, because now they're making money. Some of these kids are making millions of dollars. Certainly a lot of these kids are making hundreds of thousands of dollars. They are now essentially employees. Even if the money is coming through a collective, they are getting paid to be part of the team. But I know who I was when I was 18 to 22 years old. Lord knows I wasn't ready to handle $100,000, and I probably had as good of a head on me as any 18 to 22 year old. Like, they're still kids. Even if they're making big money, they're still kids, and we need to have leaders in place that can help indeed lead them. And Tony Bennett's not the first, and he's not going to be the last to walk out of college athletics. It's a very complicated situation to try to find blame, because I feel bad for Tony Bennett that he's walking away, because I think he's good for college basketball and good for the 18 to 22-year-olds that come through his program. But like I said, he's as much as responsible for how we got to this point as any other major power broker in the world of college athletics.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
Back at it as we continue on with the program here on a Friday night. So when you watch a Blues game starting on Monday, it's going to look a little bit different on TV, as Bally Sports are officially going to rebrand under the FanDuel Sports Network. So as opposed to Bally Sports Midwest, it is going to be FanDuel Sports. I don't know if it's going to be FanDuel Sports Midwest or FanDuel Sports Network Midwest. But either way, it's going to be FanDuel is going to be in the name. The idea right now, and not to spend too much time going into the weeds on bankruptcy hearings, and we've talked about this a fair amount on this show, and I think people tend to be, of all the questions I get, actually, this tends to be as much of a question as I get from people. So there obviously is interest. I think some people don't really care as long as they can turn on their TV and watch the Blues, or turn on their TV and watch the Cardinals, or whatever else might be out there. But a bankruptcy judge did approve earlier today the deal between Diamond Sports Group, and that's the group that owns the Bally Sports Regional Networks, and sports betting company FanDuel, and the name change is going to be implemented on Monday. Now, Major League Baseball, according to Dan Caesar, wrote about this in the Post. Actually, check that. Hannah Wyman wrote about it in something that's currently Wyman. Hannah Wyman, excuse me, wrote about it in something that's on the Post Dispatch and STL website right now. Major League Baseball's got some objections about this, saying that they had been left in the dark about the agreement between Bally and FanDuel. And if I'm Major League Baseball, actually, that I get the frustration. If you are a baseball team and DraftKings is going to become the official sponsor or the official gambling partner, or whatever, of your team, and all your games are on a network that is being that has the FanDuel name, that may not be great for that. Now, Bally's is obviously a a gambling company as well, but I don't feel like it's got the it doesn't feel the same. I don't know. It doesn't feel the same. And Major League Baseball is going to oppose anything. Major League Baseball is trying to get out from under all things Diamond Sports Group, and they're going to push back on anything that they can do to make Diamond just kind of go away. I get the sense that they are going to do. So of course, Major League Baseball is going to push that. In a news release, the president of sports for FanDuel said, quote, a large cohort of FanDuel customers are devoted RSN viewers, and this agreement allows us to further cement the FanDuel brand with sports fans and provide a unique vehicle to reward our users. Here's the bottom line. Diamond is trying to do everything they can to stay in business. They found a company that's going to give them some money for naming rights, and they got some cash infused into the company during a period where they're going through bankruptcy, and they're trying to essentially get a judge to allow them to stay in existence, where Major League Baseball is trying to get them to go away. But it's not a completely united front on all this either, because the Marlins have already reached a new broadcast deal with Diamond. So it's not something where every major league team is trying to get out from under their deals with Diamond and what was Bally Sports. Attorneys for Major League Baseball and Diamond Sports Group revealed in this same motion and same hearing that the Marlins and Diamond Sports Group have reached a new broadcasting agreement for next season. Now, the Marlins have not announced the deal, and there's been no specifics on what they are going to get paid. They weren't getting paid that much in the first place. The Marlins are not a great TV product. They're not exactly getting huge ratings. Now, if you remember a week and a half, two weeks ago, a number of teams like the Twins and the Brewers and the Rangers, I feel like there was one other in there as well, they announced that they're all going to a direct-to-consumer option. That is something that has been widely rumored that the Cardinals could go to this upcoming season, as opposed to maybe ending up on another channel like Channel 11 or Channel 32, the Matrix Midwest channel that the Channel 4 folks have started. And I'm sure everybody involved would love to get a piece of the Cardinals for sure. But nothing has been announced. It seems like there is a distinct possibility that the Cardinals would follow the same path that those other teams I mentioned would go to. And the way that would look is there would be a TV channel out there. It would probably be a different number than what is currently Bally Sports Midwest. But when it's time for Cardinals baseball, if you've got a cable system, you could go to that number and the game is going to be there. But there's going to be it's going to be more available. So if you have YouTube TV or one of those other providers that did not have a contract to have Bally, that you're probably going to have those games available. And then there's also going to be the direct to consumer option where you can essentially watch it through MLB.tv with no blackouts. That I still think that's probably the likely scenario of what happens for Cardinals baseball next year. But Diamond is doing everything that they can right now to stay in business. And at that last hearing, which led to teams like the Brewers and the Twins being able to announce their intentions moving forward, in that hearing, Diamond had already basically cut ties with those teams, saying that they did not plan to continue to broadcast those games. I don't completely understand the way this works, but the Cardinals deal and a few other deals are considered more of a joint venture than just kind of a one-sided contract going from one direction to the other. Because they're joint ventures, and I believe that has something to do with the club having some ownership in the actual network, those were not technically canceled the way the Brewers and the Twins and those teams were previously. So is there still a possibility that the Cardinals and Diamond Sports are able to get on the same page? And even if the Cardinals get paid less money than what they were supposed to get paid by Diamond, that they re-up the deal and that the Cardinals are back on that network again next year? Is that at least a possibility? That's what just happened in Miami, and that's what's going to go on with the Marlins. And Diamond still has the Atlanta Braves. They did not cut ties with the Atlanta Braves when they did that, so they still have two Major League Baseball teams in the portfolio, and they've got a lot of NHL teams, and they've got a lot of NBA teams, and they're going to continue to try to hold on to those. it's odd because every single time Diamond Sports does something, Major League Baseball pushes back in a really, really big way. When this gets announced today, when Major League Baseball comes out and opposes it, that tells me that in all likelihood, the Cardinals are not going to voluntarily end up back with Diamond. I just feel like whatever the voice of Major League Baseball and whatever the voice of Rob Manfred is, that the I think there's a good relationship between Rob Manfred and Cardinals ownership. And if Major League Baseball doesn't want teams to be aligned with Diamond Sports, then I think the Cardinals are one of those teams that walk away. It's not as easy as that, again, because of this joint partnership sort of thing. And from a Blues standpoint, it is going to look different. When you turn on the Blues game Monday and beyond, it's not going to be Bally Sports Midwest anymore. It's going to be FanDuel Sports Network Midwest. That's what it's going to be. That's what it's going to be called. And it's going to look a little bit different. So, yeah, it just really feels like Diamond is really trying to swim upstream right now to save their company and to get it out of bankruptcy. And they've got so many things going against them. And every once in a while, something happens that gives them a little bit of life. And this cash infusion that goes along with FanDuel, that's something that gives them a little bit of life. And it makes you wonder whether or not they have more of a life in front of them moving forward. If they lose the Cardinals, though, is the Blues enough for them to continue to stick around, or does it turn into something else? I don't know. That's a hard question for me to be able to answer. But that's where everything's at right now, just trying to provide a little bit of context on that. And I would guess it'll be sooner than later. I mean, they got to get it figured out. It's not that long till another baseball season starts. Sooner than later, we will learn what it's going to look like for the Cardinals on TV. Of course, you'll always be able to listen right here on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX, continuing to look forward to a great college football Saturday, one of the biggest games in the nation, one of the handful of games between two top 25 teams will take place in Champaign as number 22 Illinois matches up against number 24 Michigan. Very happy to welcome on to the program Doug Bouchon. He is the editor of Orange and Blue News, part of the Rivals Network on Twitter at Illinois Rivals. Illinois.rivals.com is where you check that out. Doug, thank you so much for taking some time with us today. How are you?
Anytime. I'm doing well. Looking forward to the game.
Yeah, this one seems like, I don't know if litmus test is the right word. That was probably the Nebraska game more than anything else. But certainly a great opportunity here when you look at the schedule the rest of the way. If Illinois can knock off Michigan, like this could turn into a two-loss type of season. This is a big game coming up on Saturday.
It really is, you know, and it's funny to see Illinois ranked higher than Michigan coming into a big game like this, and the game's on CBS, you know, nationwide broadcast, so a huge game for Illinois. A lot of similarities, I think, personnel-wise to the Penn State game, although I think Penn State has a better quarterback, a little more polished team, but a similar matchup here for Illinois, and looking for a good showing on the 100th anniversary of Memorial Stadium on Saturday.
Safe to say they have to play better against Michigan than they did against Purdue?
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, especially defensively, you know, giving up 49 points, 43 points in regulation against that Purdue team was really really surprising for an Illinois defense that had really shown a lot of improvement in year two under Aaron Henry as a defensive coordinator. They weren't playing great, but they were playing better, and it kind of just fell apart on them against Purdue, and really surprising to see Purdue's backup quarterback, Ryan Brown, just kind of go off on them and just, tons of yards through the air and on the ground, and no doubt they have to have a lot better game against Michigan.
Just about every team out there puts together a not-so-great effort during the course of the season. Good teams still find a way to win those games, and bad teams, they lose those games, or average teams, they lose those games, and it kind of derails the season. Maybe I'm trying to put a positive spin on this, but does it say something that Illinois can put that kind of effort on the field against Purdue, but they still, at the end of the day, were able to find a way to win it?
It does, and if you talk to Illinois fans that have been around a while, they'll tell you that they typically lose those kind of games. Games that they look like they had in hand, they had a big lead in the first half and blew it. And and they're 3-0 in close games and 2-0 in overtime games this year. So that does say something about the team, I think. And really, for a team like Illinois that's not going to greatly out-talent a lot of teams, you know, winning those close games are key. They couldn't win the close games last year. And it cost them. This year they are winning them, and they're on a nice trajectory.
The part of this game that really interests me is Michigan can't throw the ball, but they can run the ball. Illinois hasn't really defended the run all that well this year, but this game, they don't have to. You would think they don't have to worry about the pass quite that much because Michigan can't throw it. Like, how do you assess the Michigan rushing offense against the Illinois rushing defense?
Well, Dan, it's Michigan. They have two really good running backs in Kalel Mullings and Donovan Edwards. Mullings having a breakout year this year. He's rushed for almost 600 yards. Illinois rush defense is questionable. I mean, the inside backers struggled in the last game. They really missed Xavier Scott, who just played the first series against Purdue and then went out with an injury. He's back this week, and he's a big part of their run defense, but a big test against Michigan. And they'll probably stack the box. I mean, that's kind of the narrative. But still, if you look at what Purdue did with the backup quarterback, Jack Tuttle's probably a little bit better than Brian Brown. So you never know how it's going to play out. Of course, but the narrative going into the game is Illinois got to stop the run. And they got to protect. Luke Allmire. You know, Michigan's pass rush is probably the best in the Big Ten. Josiah Stewart, a big time pass rusher off the edge. So protecting the quarterback and stopping the run really the two keys to the game for Illinois.
Yeah, you mentioned Luke Altmyer, and Michigan is not great against the pass. Is this an opportunity for Illinois to have some success offensively and some success through the air?
It is if they can give Luke Altmyer a clean pocket, and that's really the key for him. And I think this is a big game for the offensive coordinator, Barry Lenny Jr. He's got to dial up some plays where they get rid of the ball quickly, where they, you know, maybe some max protect with 12 personnel and running back staying in the block. But just keeping Altmyer, if they can keep Altmyer on his feet, they have a good chance. And, you know, they have Will Johnson, Purdue does, or Michigan does in their secondary, an All-American corner. But the other side of the field, they're a little shaky, and Illinois line, they like to line up Pat Bryant and Zachary Franklin on the same side of the field and make defenses figure out how to cover them at the same time. And they've had a lot of success with Bryant on the deep ball, you know, running the clearing routes, and Franklin on the short and intermediate stuff. He's a really polished route runner. So they have a chance to do some damage through the air.
Illinois is ranked higher than Michigan. They have a better record than Michigan. The game is being played in Champaign, yet Michigan is about a field goal favorite. Is there any feeling of disrespect from an Illinois standpoint?
I think from the fans' perspective, but if you look at the talent, I think, you know, you can understand why. Michigan's Michigan. They have former 4- and 5-star players. They have All-Americans. But they have a quarterback problem. And I think that's been their biggest problem. And for that reason, Illinois has a chance. But I can understand why they would be 3-point favorites. And if you account for home field advantage, they're probably a touchdown favorite coming into the game.
Doug Bouchon continues to join us, covers Illinois as the editor of the Rivals Illinois site, Orange and Blue News. I mentioned this at the top, and I know from a team standpoint, they're going to take every game one at a time, but if we take a step back and look at the rest of the schedule, so right now, they're 5-1. If they can win this game against Michigan, they have a likely loss the next week at No. 2 Oregon, but then they've got home games against Minnesota and Michigan State and road games against Rutgers and Northwestern. That schedule is incredibly favorable for Illinois. Are fans already thinking through that idea of maybe putting together a 2-loss season and kind of, you know, flirting with college football playoff and certainly getting to a really, really legit bowl game?
No doubt. No doubt they are. I mean, they're looking at the schedule and they see winnable games, and there are winnable games. There are some toss-up games in there. I think playing at Rutgers is going to be a tough game, probably a tougher game than what people think. But I think mentally, you know, if they lose to Michigan, if they go as expected, go out to Oregon and lose to the number three team, I think, in the country this week, they have to survive that from a mental standpoint. And bounce back and keep focused on the next game. Because they even if they lose those two games and they're sitting at 5-3, they have a lot of opportunity ahead of them. They're on a trajectory to win 8 or 9 games, and that's a big deal for Illinois. Illinois hasn't won a lot of 8- and 9- win seasons over the years. So that, you know, fans are looking at that. They're looking at the teams ahead of them in the AP standings and the possibility for the college football playoffs.
For folks who are listening who want to get even more coverage of Fighting Illini Athletics, mention that you are the publisher of Orange and Blue News. Tell folks about that and how they can get locked into what you guys are doing.
or you can go to illinois.rivals.com, and we'll get a game preview on the front page, a lot of recruiting stuff. You know, of course, the Rivals Network is very recruiting heavy, and a lot of stuff on players that are high school players that are visiting for this game. They're bringing in a whole bunch of four-star kids, and, you know, the 5-1 start has got some kids looking at them. They're more necessarily looking at them before. A lot of basketball season is coming up, so we got a lot of basketball content on the front page. So a really good time to subscribe. Just go to illinois.rivals.com and sign up and get started following the Illini.
He is Doug Bouchon. Again, he is the editor for the Illinois rival site, Orange and Blue News. Doug, thanks so much for taking some time. Hopefully we can catch up with you every once in a while.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
That's Doug Bouchon joining us here on a Graybar Sports Open Line. Does a great job covering Illinois athletics. And like I said, that's a big game. That's a really big game coming up tomorrow. I think Illinois is en route to a pretty fantastic season, almost no matter what. One win away from bowl eligibility, as we mentioned a few moments ago. Lots of very winnable games left on the schedule. But if you want this to turn into a legit, really, really special season, well, win tomorrow. Win tomorrow and then take care of business the rest of the way. You can afford losing against Oregon here in a couple weeks. If you're a two-loss team and your two losses are against then number 9 Penn State, and a Penn State team that has since moved even higher into the rankings. And right now, if everything continues the way it's going for Penn State, they'll be a college football playoff team. If your two losses are to two college football playoff teams in Penn State and Oregon, and you take care of business everywhere else, and you're kind of one of those fringe teams in the when it comes to college football playoff time, maybe something wild and wacky and crazy ends up happening and you get in. I don't think that's going to happen. That seems incredibly unlikely, but it does set you up for a fantastic, fantastic bowl game. All right, we will take one more break. We will come back, and we're going to wrap up this edition of the program, this week's worth of shows as well. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line. My name is Matt Pauly. This is KMOX. Starting to wrap things up, it's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX, and coming up later on this evening, in about a little bit more than an hour from now, it is the Rachel Zimmerman Show, part of your Friday night routine now, and also available via podcast as well. And joining us to preview what's going to be coming up tonight, it is our good friend Rachel Zimmerman. Of course, you hear her on the Dave Glover Show. If you didn't realize it, she has her own weekly show, and it is awesome. Hey, Rachel, how are you?
Hey, Matt, I'm great. How are you?
I am good. It's good to see you as always. What do you have coming up on the program tonight?
I'm really excited about this week's show, which I know I say every week, but I have some great guests. And this week, I'm going to talk to Andrew Volpe from the band Ludo.
Okay.
They are amazing. I came up in college radio, and Ludo was a huge, huge deal to me and my classmates back in the day. And still, they are coming together for a reunion show called How Ludo Ween at the Pageant. They do a series of that every year. So I got to talk to Andrew about that and his creative process, which was super, super interesting. So yeah, it's a fun interview.
So they're not like fully together. Like they're not... They do this show every year, right? But outside of that, they don't do a whole lot else, right?
From what I understand, they're recording new music.
Okay.
So maybe a tour is in the future. I don't know.
Okay. So that my next question was going to be like, when you're somebody who has like musical talents and musical abilities and you're part of a band, but the band isn't like full-time, what do you do in those situations? But if they're recording music, that answers that question.
Yeah, and they I don't know, they're just really great. He talks a lot about how, you know, the band, everyone in the band kind of brings something different to the table, and they all just kind of mesh together, and it's this like big wonderful thing at the end of the day. So it's cool. I went and saw Halloween back in like 2019, I think okay. It was pre-pandemic. It was so fun. Everybody gets dressed up, and they have like really amazing sets and stuff. So it's a really good time, even if you've never really listened to this band. If you like just a good show, I would maybe check it out and maybe go get some tickets.
You mentioned college radio. So I think a lot for those of us who did college radio, and most of us did some version of that. Like I look back on my college experience at K-State, and it was my college station was Wildcat 91.9, and I will forever I have friends that I created there that I have forever, and there's just like this camaraderie. And you mentioned the music, like there are songs that you just hear, and all of a sudden it takes you back to being in the college radio station studio. It's real. It's kind of something that maybe we don't talk about a lot in this industry, but college radio is such a big part of many of us as broadcasters, how we really get into this.
Oh, absolutely. I just talked about this on the Dave Glover Show today. it just changed my life when I entered the college radio program. I'm, you know me, I'm not the most outgoing person in the world, but I used to be like painfully shy. Like it was really bad. And when I got into radio, it just really brought me out of my shell. And I made so many good friends and you just build confidence. There's something about talking into a mic with headphones on and hearing your own voice, like really hearing it, that some people hate that. I gain confidence from it. So I don't know. It was a really great experience for me. I wish I could go back in time and redo it a little better. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like everyone has like regrets or like, I should have listened to this person. I should have done it this way. But it was so fun for me. And I'm glad to hear you had a great experience too.
It's funny because when you're doing it, it feels like the most important thing.
Oh,
in
yeah.
the world. And there's probably nobody listening.
Right.
Maybe your parents found the stream or something. There's nobody listening, but it feels so incredibly important at the time.
Yeah, it does. And I was the music director, not to brag, of my college radio station. And this guy, his name is Jesse Rea. He might still work at the pageant. He emailed me once and he was like, you have the best playlist in St. Louis. And Matt, when I tell you I'm still living off that compliment, I absolutely am 15 years later.
That is awesome. So Rachel Zimmerman Show tonight. If people can't hear it live, the podcast version available as well.
It's already up. Go check it out. Just search for the Rachel Zimmerman Show anywhere you get your podcasts.
Rachel, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Matt.
That's the Rachel Zimmerman Show coming up this evening, a little bit more than an hour from now. So it's going to be at 9 o'clock this evening. And that's going to do it for this edition of a Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk to you again coming up on Monday right here on KMOX.